Hello, my name is Harold Covington, and I'm the public spokesman for the Northwest Front. The Northwest Front is a movement to establish a sovereign and independent homeland for all white people here in the Pacific Northwest. The white race in North America is in danger of literal, physical extinction. If current destructive demographic trends continue, white people will be a minority in the United States and Canada by the year 2050. And we will have vanished completely from North America by 2100. The real point of no return, however, is far nearer in time. By the year 2030, the median age of the white population of North America will have become so high that we will no longer be capable of reproducing ourselves in sufficient numbers to overcome the tide of mud-colored third-world immigration. Radical dangers require radical solutions. We as a people have wasted the past 6 decades on pointless, futile, and impotent right-wing and kosher conservative organizations and strategies. The overwhelming majority of these past organizations and movements refused to recognize the vital central importance of race in all issues, and they refused to recognize the urgent need for state power in order to preserve the existence of our race. The result of the past 60 years of right-wing failure and impotence is that we are now out of time. There is only one strategy remaining to us that may be able to secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Our last remaining hope to stave off extinction is the establishment of a sovereign and independent nation on the continent of North America for white people only. Considerations of demographics, economics, and a history of commitment and martyrdom in the persons of Bob Matthews, Sam and Vicki Weaver, and Richard Butler dictate that the territory for this sovereign white republic must lie in the Pacific Northwest. The first step towards the establishment of the Northwest American Republic is a mass migration of the existing racially aware white community to the states of Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and the western part of Montana. It is a matter of the utmost urgency that you make this vitally important commitment to the future of our people, that you do so now, and that you come to the Northwest homeland with only the minimum delay necessary to raise sufficient funds and put your affairs in order. Now, the fact that you've contacted the Northwest Front and gotten hold of this CD indicates that you probably already have at least some idea as to what we're about, but I'll do what I can to tell you about us in the short time available here. Along with the CD, you should have received some other stuff, specifically a copy of the Northwest Front Party Manual, which is called the White Book, and some other literature. If you didn't get this stuff, go to www.northwestfront.org and contact us through the site, and we'll get that material to you. In that Party Manual is a recommended reading list of books on all kinds of subjects, race and political science and communism, and the Jewish question. And there is also a section explaining to you about the 5 Northwest Independence novels. Now, the fact is that in order to fully understand what I'm saying here, and in order to ask the right questions and get the right answers, you need to be familiar with a whole body of knowledge that white Americans are usually denied access to by the media and the public education system. The NF is in a kind of unfortunate position in that in order to bring you fully up to speed on everything we're saying and convince you of the fact that we're right, and we are right, by the way, you have to sit down and read at least 1 or 2 big, thick books, and that's a problem in 21st century America. Now, a lot of us, especially younger white people who were trapped in public schools as children and whose parents couldn't afford to give them an actual education in a private school, no longer have the ability, the concentration, or the basic literacy to read a long block of text for content. There's an old saying that racial integration is kind of like mixing manure and ice cream. It does wonders for the manure, but it doesn't do much for the ice cream. White people, especially younger white people, have been dragged down to the lowest common denominator, and basically nothing is being taught in public schools these days, which the black kids can't wrap their minds around, and that means that, frankly, not a lot's being taught in public schools these days. White kids have basically been dragged down to their level. White people are kind of regressing into the past, before reading and writing was invented, and now we're reliant once again on pictures, on electronic screens, or in so-called graphic novels, kind of like our ancestors who drew pictures on cave walls. The party is trying to adapt to audio and visual means of communication, hence our YouTube videos and things like the CD. Now, we also have a weekly podcast called Radio Free Northwest, which can be downloaded from northwestfront.org every week. But the fact is that the bulk of the knowledge that you need to know, and which I need to try and make you understand, is contained in actual physical books of the kind that you hold in your hand. You're really going to need to read those books, especially the Northwest Independence novels. A simple fact is that in the 45 minutes or so I've got here, I just can't give you guys who are new to all this a complete racial education from beginning to end. Those Northwest novels especially are important. They were written with the specific intention of answering every question that anybody might come up with in as much detail as possible. And it's really hard for me to discuss detailed answers to questions with people who haven't read those five Northwest novels, because the answers you're looking for are almost all in there, spelled out in much greater specific detail than I could ever give you in 25 words or less. Now, before we go any further, let's talk about my language and the concept of thought crime, which I'm sorry to say is a very real factor in 21st century American life. I need to get some things clear with you guys. I am a racially conscious white man, and I am a free man as well. And that means that I don't allow the present dictatorship to control or to command what I think or say or write. And that includes a number of forbidden words. You will hear on this CD and on Radio Free Northwest that I routinely use words like nigger and kike and beaner and faggot. I use these words specifically because our lords and masters have forbidden me to do so, because the Jewish and liberal ruling elite does not want men and women of my race to use these words. And whatever the regime wants white people not to do is something that we're under a moral obligation to do as often as possible. This isn't quite as simplistic an answer as it sounds. There is good, hard reasoning behind this. I hate to get back to telling you guys to sit down and read a big, thick book, but if any of you out there have not read George Orwell's historic novel 1984, I recommend in the strongest possible terms that you obtain a copy and do so immediately. Even though it was written in 1948, it's timeless. It just explains so very much about the world that we live in today. Now, when you get your copy, I recommend that you start with the appendix at the end of the book, which discusses something called Newspeak. It's an essay on the use and perversion of language in order to control thought, and it is even more applicable today than it was all those years ago when it was first written. Long story short, it's not racial insensitivity or hurting the poor little monkoid's feelings or anything like that which are the regime's concern. The wealthy and powerful liberals and Jews who run this society don't give a rat's ass about some street nigger's hurt feelings. What the liberals want to do is to control our very thoughts by making us so afraid to speak certain words out loud for fear of economic retaliation or for fear of psychopathic black violence that we censor our own selves so effectively that we don't even think such words, lest we make a slip. Or think about the concepts and the ideas of racial difference and white superiority that those words convey. The power elite in Western society doesn't only want us afraid to say nigger, they don't want us to even think nigger or be able to think it. The wealthy liberals and Jews who rule us don't want white people to think any thought that contradicts what we are taught in our politically correct classrooms or our state-controlled liberal media. The regime does not want white people to have in their minds words which can even so much as formulate hidden thoughts, never mind express them. The long-term goal, as stated in Orwell's 1984, is to make so-called thought crime impossible because we will lack even the language necessary to formulate forbidden thoughts in our minds. It is absolutely essential that white people break through this thought control process and recover true freedom of speech and thought. And that first and foremost represents the freedom to say nigger and kike and faggot. Because you see, the liberals who rule us are not just vicious and evil, they are wrong. Political correctness is crap. Liberalism is not based in any kind of reality. There is no such thing as an African American. There is no such thing as a black person. The term person implies an equality with white people which does not, in fact, exist in the real world. They are not people, at least not in the same sense that we are. They are a more primitive and rudimentary species of the genus Homo than white people, but they are biologically and genetically different in many ways other than skin color. Skin color is merely the most obvious of racial differences. The most important ones are biological. Negroes have inborn differences from white people that cannot be altered by any amount of affirmative action or diversity or what have you, including, among other things, lesser intelligence, lower cognitive skills generally, and a brain which is incapable of developing moral thought to the same level as white people. For example, their inability to empathize with anyone outside their own immediate family grouping. It is no accident that all cannibalistic cultures are in Africa and Papua New Guinea, and they are black-skinned. They are not black people. They are niggers. And they know it even if we don't. Why do you think they call themselves nigger all the time? They don't respect themselves, so why should we respect them? Then again, we don't respect ourselves either, since white people won't fight for what we have, and we let them do us such terrible harm while we cower in a corner like whipped dogs. So why the hell should anyone respect us? There is no such thing as a gay person. There is nothing gay about filthy and unsanitary perversions that spread loathsome diseases. The word homosexual is simply a descriptive term for certain unnatural sexual acts. It does not describe the people who commit these acts. Those people are faggots, queers, bugger boys, dykes, and other terms I won't use, but which are more colorful and descriptive. Not to refer to these people as gay or homosexual or without any pejorative wording at all is to imply that they and their perversions are somehow acceptable in civilized society. They are not. Now you see what I'm getting at. White people and the defenders of Western civilization have to stop letting the enemy define the parameters of discussion and determine what is and is not acceptable by way of thought and language. We need to force that power out of the hands of the liberals and their government and their media and their law and back into ours. And that's another thing. We need to be free to at least think in those very terms, to encompass in our imaginations the concept of liberals and Democrats and the government and the law being forced to do things, being compelled to change their behavior, and being punished for what they have done in the past. And I don't mean by being scolded on blogs. The thought is father to the deed, as liberals know full well. If we are free to think disrespectfully of minorities and perverts and the system itself, then it's only a matter of time before we start thinking about other things. And that's what they're really terrified of. There is nothing that frightens a Jew or a liberal more than a white man whose mind is not under their control. Okay, I don't want you new folks getting bored and turned off by the droning sound of my voice, so here's a music break.
Calling all the clans together. Calling all the clans together. Calling all the clans together. Brothers, come around. Calling south and north together. Calling west and east together. Calling all the clans together. Brother, come around. Can't afford to be a bit of sleeping. Can't you see the reaper reaping? Brothers, come and run. Never mind the children of flying. Never mind the dead and dying. Can't you hear the piper piping? Brother, come and run. Come running fast. Come running hard. Running for all you were. Come and run through the gates of hell itself and let the devil take the hindmost. We're gonna be calling all the clan together. Calling all the clan together. Calling all the clan together. Brothers, come running.
The next thing I want to tell you about the Northwest Front is something that it's very important for you to know and understand. We are white separatists, not conservatives. The only thing we want to conserve is the white race. Now, what are we talking about here? The late Commander George Lincoln Rockwell once said, and I'm paraphrasing a little here, a white nationalist is someone who is concerned about his race. A conservative is only concerned about his money. That pretty much hits the nail on the head. The Northwest Independence Movement is concerned with race, with the effects of race on every issue from culture to religion to politics to science, not just economics. Race is the American issue and has been since Columbus first landed on that Caribbean island and chucked his flagpole into the sand on the beach. The basic issue of whose land this is. A typical American conservative, by definition, will have certain social issues on his agenda, like abortion or school prayer, or being against sodomitic marriage, whatever, and of course he's against gun control. But the fact remains that primarily your average Joe conservative simply doesn't want to be taxed in order to support non-white minorities. He has to work. He has never had anything given to him in his life, and so he doesn't see why people with black and brown skins should get a free ride on his back. It's humanly understandable, of course. Nobody likes paying taxes, but to view life through any economics-only perspective is essentially a Jewish construct. The essence of the Jewish worldview is pure materialism, not spiritual, not political, not moral, and not human. You also need to understand that in the American context, there are several different kinds of conservatives. The two that we need to be concerned with now are what's known as paleoconservatives and neoconservatives. Paleoconservatives are your old red, white, and blue Pat Buchanan and Sam Francis types. They believe in limited government, states' rights, strict construction of the Constitution, unrestricted free enterprise, your basic laissez-faire capitalism. Now, these are the guys who would have been right at home during the presidency of William McKinley in 1900. The neoconservatives are basically Jews pretending to be conservatives. People like Irving Kristol and the whole Gubu Jew crew who took over the White House for 8 years when Jugears Bush was president. The spiritual founder of neoconservatism, in fact, was a Jewess named Ayn Rand, whose real name was Elisa Rosenbaum. Neoconservatives also include the Christian Zionist right, your Pat Robertson 700 Club types. But the conservatives who concern us here in the Northwest are not part of the establishment, but ordinary white people who have been more or less absorbed into the mainstream Republican Party for lack of a better alternative. Well, now there is a better alternative, or at least an alternative that will work. The Northwest Front. I won't call these people Tea Partiers because no one is exactly sure what Tea Party is or what it means. But there is a growing mass of white discontent right now, largely due to the forced imposition of socialized medicine in the form of Obamacare and all the resulting losses of jobs and work hours and health insurance cancellations. But also because more and more white Americans have come to realize that somehow, they're not sure how, a ghastly mistake was made on November the 4th, 2008, and there are now people ruling them who do not have their best interests at heart and who want to rob them and take away their freedom in ways they would never have believed possible before. Millions of white people are very uneasy and upset about the way that the country and the government in Washington, D.C. are moving, and about the increasing acts of racial violence directed against them by niggers, like the knockout game that's been in the media recently. But they are still expressing themselves mostly in economic terms, at least in public. The racial undertone is definitely there, though, because for the first time ever, government oppression now has a black face in the form of Obama. This has brought about a very subtle change in conservatism in that it's no longer quite so forbidden to mention or at least hint at race. The liberal media jump all over anyone who does bring it up, of course, but I don't think that's having the same effect it used to have. Now, it's quite obviously just a ploy to shut people up by designating any criticism of Obongo and the Democrats as racism. And it's so obvious that I think it really just pisses people off and makes them much less susceptible to running and hiding under the bed when someone utters the word racist, and that's a very encouraging development. The first thing white people have to do is stop being afraid of words, whether the word is nigger or racist. What's really going to open the can of worms is so-called immigration reform. In other words, amnesty for the 25 to 30 million or so illegal aliens now unlawfully residing in North America. Mostly Hispanic mestizos. The object is to legalize them, get them on the voters' rolls, and create an artificial Democrat majority so that we will become essentially a one-party totalitarian state, kind of like Mexico was under the PRI for about 70 years. Quite simply put, this would be the end of America in any sense that white people have known it or understand the term. The 30 million newly legalized beaners would then bring in their uncles and cousins and mamacitas and whatnot by the millions, and within a generation at best, along with all the other crap that political correctness and democracy have dumped onto our heads, we will be a minority of elderly white people ripe for victimization and violent extinction. When the blacks and the browns finally do begin to simply slaughter us, Rwanda style, they won't have to look very far. Most all of us will be in state-run nursing homes eating dog food and sleeping on foam rubber mattresses made in Guatemala. Ordinary white people are finally starting to pay attention to what's going on around them. They can see that something is very badly wrong, and they're starting to get a few vague glimpses and flashes of inspiration in their minds as to what. People like Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck are giving them a little bit of the story, in very diluted form, but these Tea Party types, I think, sense that there is a lot more that they're not being told. Bear in mind, organized conservatism serves the Republican Party, and the Republican Party serves capitalism. And it's capitalism that has brought the 30 million illegal aliens here for their cheap labor. The Northwest Front can tell you the whole story, including the parts the power structure doesn't want you to hear. The main defect of conservative white people's outlook is that they have almost no idea about the Jews or the ramifications of the Jewish question. Most of them either think Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, or else all they know about Jews comes from watching that stupid movie Fiddler on the Roof. Now that's going to be one of our main roles in the coming years, to somehow bring our own people to an awareness of the Jewish aspect of their problems here in the Northwest and around the world. The biggest problem of all is that grassroots Tea Party types still believe that the system can be salvaged. It can't. They still believe in traditional electoral politics. They still believe that they can vote their way out of their problems. During the 2012 elections, the Tea Party was successfully absorbed into the Republicans to prevent them from striking out on their own politically, and we all know how much good that did. There's not much point in running elections if the Democrats are simply going to steal them through vote fraud no matter what. So long as white people are mentally and spiritually trapped in these outdated and archaic forms of political thought, so long as they are unable to think outside the electoral box, so long as they still believe that the solution lies in pulling a lever in a booth for some guy in a suit, then there will never, ever be any real change in this society. There's simply no point in holding elections if there's no candidates who represent the white man's racial interests. Always remember, the primary purpose of democracy is to prevent change, to ensure that actual state power is always held and retained by the same class or group of people, even if different individuals are sitting behind the desk in the Oval Office. The fact is that we've tried conservatism for the past 60 years and it doesn't work. Everything from Wallace for president to the John Birch Society to Reaganism to Ron Paulism, and none of it has had any lasting effect or produced one jot of genuine change. Not once in the past 60 years has the empowered liberal and Jewish elite establishment been forced to change their behavior in any significant way or to abandon one destructive and anti-white policy. In America, the essence of conservatism is learning to lose like a gentleman. We Americans like our politics like we like our fast food burgers, cased in styrofoam, loaded with cholesterol and additives that'll kill us, and smothered in fattening condiments and sauce. We don't want to do anything that requires too much analysis and thought. Americans don't like to think too much. It hurts our heads. Indeed, most of us have never been taught to think at all. We've been taught to feel, and that's not the same thing. So conservatives take the easy way out. They focus on individual issues like Obamacare or guns or abortion or the Federal Reserve, and they never even attempt to change the system itself, which has created this living hell from the ground up. When a white man loses his job because of affirmative action, or he has his home foreclosed on, when he has a loved one butchered by niggers, or a child dragged into drugs and race mixing by the filthy Judaic culture, or when he's victimized by our vile court system in some way, or when his daughter presents him with a mulatto grandchild, or when his son can't get into college because of the racial quotas, when he is forced into daily contact with buggery and third world filth, or when he watches a loved one stripped bare of a lifetime of work and savings because they or someone in their family were so unfortunate as to get sick. These are powerful motivations for wanting to attack the system which allowed these things to happen. But the overwhelming majority of white people who are involved in right-wing and racial causes and grouplets don't want to change the system. They want revenge on the system, which is not the same thing. They get involved hoping to right their personal wrongs, not their people's wrongs. That may be understandable, but it will only take us so far. What so many conservatives really want is for the existing system to work right, meaning work for them personally. They want the system to give them their props, as the Whiggers say. They want the existing order to keep its promises. They don't want to overthrow the establishment, they just want their share. They want the American dream, which was promised to us all and which has not been delivered. Conservatives want everything to be the way it was, or they think it was, in some far-off, dimly perceived, idyllic past in the time of abundance. For my generation, it's the 1950s, with Bobby Sox and Ozzie and Harriet and Rock Around the Clock. For many of you, it will be the 1960s or 1970s. Okay, in a way I can kind of get the nostalgia for the 60s, although I was there and I can tell you the 60s weren't all they've been cracked up to be, believe me. Anyway, what most white people really want out of all this is the good things in life that we have now or used to have, or what we've been socially conditioned to want. We want the money and the shiny high-tech toys. We want the SUVs and the football games on TV. We want the backyard barbecue and the vacations at the beach or the lake. We want the family trips to Six Flags with screaming kids in the back of the SUV. We want that good old-time religion we learned at our mother's knee. We want Mom and God and apple pie. We want the old red, white, and blue. We want politicians and preachers in expensive suits to come on TV and tell us everything's fine and we can enjoy ourselves without feeling guilty or worrying about anything, and, of course, we want the beer. Gotta have that cold brewski in the fridge. And at the same time, we want to have none of the bad things. No crime, no drugs, no niggers, no Mexicans, no filthy faggots, no feminist bitches, no lawyers, no scummy quasi-commie Occupy brats, no liberal talking heads on TV, no non-white faces on the tube or in the stores, and everyone around us looking and thinking and speaking the same language as ourselves. And by the way, there is not a damn thing wrong with wanting all of those things. The problem is that conservatives think that somehow this is possible, but it isn't. They think that somehow we can vote ourselves this wonderful imaginary world if we just believe the right politician in a suit with a $400 haircut, but we can't. We are living in a nightmare, and we will not wake up from it. History's clock moves forward, not backward, people. The old America some of us grew up in is gone forever. There is no going back. We have to figure out how we're going to move forward when the United States of America breaks up exactly like the Soviet Union did not a generation ago. And people, that's going to happen. Now, the first thing white people have to get out of our minds is this idea that somehow we will be able to take back the entire United States of America. Now, if there is to be any hope for any kind of survival on this continent for white people and for the Western civilization we have created, then it lies in some form of secession. Listen very carefully, people. Read my lips. We will never be able to take back the entire United States. That ship sailed back in 1958 when we didn't take the guns out of the closet and resist by force after Eisenhower ordered the army into Little Rock, Arkansas. We have left it too late. We in our own movement screwed around for 60 years and wasted our time on dead-end leaders and dead-end ideas, and yes, I include myself in that indictment. There is nothing left to take back. It's gone. There are simply too many of them and not enough of us. Too many niggers, too many Mexicans and other illegals, too many bugger boys and carpet munchers, too many white women who have been damaged beyond repair by feminism, too many liberal left-wing dumbasses, too many pale-skinned dumbasses of our own race who are hopelessly brain-dead and who can't be reached because their minds and their thought processes have been poisoned and destroyed by the television and the personal computer and the 1001 lies of the Jews. How is this going to happen? The military? Is some five-star general suddenly going to develop a conscience and stage a coup and drag Obama's baby shit brown ass out of the White House and then turn his troops loose on the Mexicans and drive them out? Now, even if some general did give such an order, would he be obeyed? Who do you think makes up the rank and file of the U.S. military these days? Do you think white people are going to just simultaneously rise up and throw all this garbage out of the country? Who's going to do that? Conservatives have had 60 years to try, and they failed. Who is going to do that? A bunch of old people in their wheelchairs and their walkers who don't want to pay taxes? Young white punks, losers, and slackers who do nothing except sit around listening to rap music, play their Game Boys, and live with their mothers until they're 30? Guys, this Take Back All of America for White People thing? Not happening. We had damned well better start thinking up another plan. Oh, wait, we have one. It's called the Northwest Imperative. We have been raised from birth with the idea of one nation indivisible under God, which is codswallop. Nowhere is it chiseled in stone by God or anyone else that the North American continent absolutely must be politically united into one national entity for all eternity until the crack of doom. Manifest destiny is horse dung. History and human realities don't work like that. Anything and everything is possible for mankind. Human beings create their own reality, and we have to create a new one here in the Northwest. The Northwest martyr, Edgar Steele, always used to close his nickel rants with New America, an idea whose time has come. I've got a better idea. End America, an idea whose time has come. Every other continent on the face of the earth has many countries on it, and eventually so will our continent. That's just the way it's going to work out. That's the way human nature will shape this up. A century from now, North America will be almost like the old South Africa with Bantu stands. The Southwest, from Southern California to Texas, will be Aslan. There will be a Republic of New Africa or something of the kind in what's now the South. Unless the Hispanics push in from Aslan and kill or enslave all the niggers, which they may do, since that's pretty much what they've done in other places like Brazil and Central America. Now, there may be some remnants of the old United States left in the Midwest and the Northeastern Corridor, in theory ruled over by some decrepit remnant of the Washington, D.C. government, but independent in fact. And there will be a Northwest American Republic, for white people only, in the states of Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Western Montana, and with any luck, bits and pieces of Northern California, British Columbia, Alberta, and Alaska. It will be there 100 years from now. Because we're going to make it so. Now, right now, the Northwest Front is sifting like a prospector panning a stream, looking for that little bit of color in the bottom of the pan. A large part of the people that we're sifting are going to be conservatives, or maybe not, but like the Marines, we're going to be looking for a few good men and women. Men and women who have a few brain cells to rub together, and who can see that despite all the Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh crap, the old America is gone forever and we have to start over. We'll be sifting through thousands of contacts just like yours, and we'll be keeping and nurturing the two or three out of every batch who seem to have a little bit of character and a glimmer of understanding. The road is open for you to be a man again. The road of courage and self-worth, of pride and honor, and eventually of glory, lies open for you just as much as it ever lay open for any of the many pioneers down through the millennia who have made our race and our culture and our civilization what it is today. It's the road Northwest.
Westward from the Davis Strait, 'twas there 'twas said to lie, the sea route to the Orient, for which so many died. Seeking gold and glory, leaving weather broken bones, and a long forgotten lonely care. Ah, for just one time, I won't. passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one warm line through a land so wide and savage, and make a northwest passage to the sea. 3 centuries thereafter, I take passage overland in the footsteps of brave Kelso, where his sea of flowers began. Watching cities rise before me, then behind me sink again. This tardiest explorer driving hard across the plain. Ah, for just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one more line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea. And through the night, behind the wheel, the mileage clicking west, I think upon Mackenzie, David Thompson, and the rest, who cracked the mountain ramparts and did show a path for me to race the roaring Fraser. For just one time I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea, tracing one more line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage. So different from the first men through this way. Like them, I left a settled life, I threw it all away to seek a Northwest Passage at the call of many men, to find their hut